Simply Focus mit Elva Czerny and Dominic Gilda for Live and J&D.
We've got a brand new exciting episode for you. Please welcome your hosts, Elfie Czerny and Dominic Godad.
Welcome back, everyone, to episode number 42. We are in Sedona today and are here with Kat and Gary Barclay. Hello and welcome.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having us on.
Hi, everyone.
It's so beautiful here. We have a view and see all those red rocks and beautiful mountain cliff. So you're really living in a beautiful spot.
Yeah, it's been something we've wanted to do for many, many years, and we finally made that happen.
So thank you very much for having us here in your beautiful home in this beautiful area.
And we're 1 week before Christmas, and we have a wonderful topic about eating and food and living your life maybe in a different way during this holiday season. Let's see. Kat Barclay is a doctor in psychology. Gary Barclay is a health psychologist. And we met you yesterday, went out for dinner, and you told us the story of how you use solution focus in your diabetes prevention program. And we're very, very enthusiastic to hear more about that and how you use solution focus in this combination.
We also heard lots of lovely stories about your experience with high tech and learned that Kat was one of the first people who wrote a book about how to make meetings online, how to conduct meetings online. And the two of you, and this is, I think, also a very speciality of the two of you, are working a lot online and with live webinars and really bringing people to interact online wherever they are.
Exactly. We've kind of taken the tack that since our background is technology and in particular webinars, that we would do our client work online. So both our individual clients and our group programs are all done live online so that nobody has to leave their house. They can join the meeting in their bunny slippers if they choose, and we don't have to worry about driving to a location or any of those kinds of issues. So it's been a really great combination of both the technology as well as the community that we can build online.
And then there comes solution focus, and we are very curious. Kat, what fascinates you with solution focus?
I began using solutions-focused work probably about 20 years ago. Didn't know that it was called that at that time because it just hadn't come across the word, but I was in psychology studying various models and theories. And one of the things that fascinated me was how can we get away from the negativeness of the more traditional therapeutic approaches and move toward the positive, the future. And how to work with what we have strengths in to do a better job going forward rather than focus on the negative problems. So I worked with that in my own way for quite a number of years and then came across probably an article, if I remember back right, about solutions focus and said, oh, that's it. And that's really how I got started with all of the more focused information and reading and studying about solution focus to then use it more appropriately with clients, but also with my students that I have in my university classes. So that's how I got started.
What is it that fascinates you with solution focus?
What fascinates me? I think the fascination is that when the questioning is used with clients, it is a type of questioning that they normally have never had access to before. They haven't been asked some of the questions, such as the future perfect idea. Many of them have not been asked questions involving scaling. And so, therefore, when these questions are asked to people, it stops them and they have to think. And then they, in the process of thinking, begin to understand and figure out some answers that they have not come up with before. To me, That is the fascination with solutions focus, and the fascination that the people have because they have been introduced to it.
You did training with Mark McCurgo and then sent your husband Gary to the same training, and now we're of course curious, Gary, what fascinates you with solution focus?
The thing that I found most intriguing about it was that it was the absolute opposite of what my original training in psychology was. When I was moving out of technology into psychology, everything that I was encountering was looking at the past and the negative aspects of where the people were. And that felt very uncomfortable for me. In fact, I changed my approach because of that and stopped my training for quite a number of years until I was able to find a different way for me to work with people, to approach people's problems. And that was twofold. One, health psychology, which didn't exist back when I first started training. And two, that the solution focus option gave me the ability to approach my work with people from an entirely positive perspective, even a very different and even more positive perspective than positive psychology, which probably sounds strange, but to me, solution focus is not about happiness like positive psychology is. It's about getting yourself to a new solution, ignoring the fact that the problem exists and just finding ways to work around the problems that you're dealing with, which then naturally become solutions rather than problems. And so for me, it was just the ability to take a different approach, an approach that worked positively, that respected the client for what they were able to do, not dealing with what they had, in essence, screwed up in their past or had somebody else screw up for them. So that's the way I approached it and why I found it so fascinating.
And you use solution focus in your diabetes prevention program. And he told us your story and how this story was also influential for what you two do now.
Yeah, back in 2009, I discovered one morning that I was obese. And that's really the way it happened. I was bending over to tie my shoe and couldn't understand why bending over to tie my shoe hurt my stomach. And for the fact that I was a health coach at the time, to discover kind of out of the blue that I'm obese and not a very good role model was a real hit up alongside the head with a 2x4 for me. And so at the time, having the solution focus orientation to it, rather than say, how did I get here? It's what can I do to resolve this problem? And so that naturally led me to find a solution for myself. I did the research on dieting, decided that that wasn't the right way to go, changed the way I ate instead of going into a diet, got more active than I was. And I was able to lose the 50 pounds I was carrying in a year by doing that. And so I bring that same approach to my diabetes prevention program, rather than telling people that they have to follow a specific diet, which we know isn't going to work, telling them that they have to join a certain activity program to get their activity numbers for the week. I approach it more from the perspective of what do they feel they can do? What is working as they're making the changes, and how can we approach more of that? So rather than just following a structured program, it's a little more free form. It's much more individual, because even though we're in a group environment, I'm working with each individual on what's working for them, not specifically saying, do it this way. So it's been kind of a real eye-opener for me to see that we can take something that is typically, this program created by the Center for Disease Control is very structured and scientific, and move it to a much more personalized, success-oriented kind of program.
How was that for you, Kat, when he discovered that he wants to change his life?
Well, it was exciting, I have to say. To have a realization that one has gotten to a point and you didn't even realize you got there was also on my side of the fence. I've been hypoglycemic diagnosed since high school, which is kind of the opposite of being diabetic. It's related, but not on the high sugar side. It's on the low sugar side. So my entire life has been involved with managing how not to have low blood sugar and the implications and ramifications thereof. So when Gary realized that he was overweight and to do something about it, it also was an impetus on me to say, okay, what about me? And sure enough, many years of sitting in front of a computer, not being as active as I had been in younger years, had taken its toll. So guess what? I was overweight also. And And I have consistently now, over the last several years, since Gary's been working on it, also brought my numbers down and am in much better shape than I was. Also changing our lifestyle, which is what we, of course, now work with our clients on.
And how important was not only the realization, but also the preferred future, future perfect back then?
The thing that happened for me is that suddenly I realized that my health was not perfect, that I had real issues and potentially even more real issues coming down the road. Surprisingly, I was not diabetic at the time, which most people that are overweight are, but I had not gone to that point. What I decided was that I'm now 50-something. I don't remember exactly when I made this realization. And I felt like I had a lot more to do with my life. And so I decided that I had at least another 50 years that I wanted to live. And then I rounded that off to a nice even 110. So to be able to do that, to reach even 100, let alone 110, I knew that I had to focus both on the here and now, changing the things I need to change, but by having a direction based on a future that I wanted to see, I had to stay on that path. And I had to keep reinforcing that image in my mind and kind of in my environment to keep remembering that 110 has meaning for me.
How did you do that? Or do you do that?
Actually, the way that I did it back then, and it really hasn't changed all that much, is that I don't like the word goals, but that number became a goal, if you will. It became something that would be easy to shoot for. You know, you could put 110 up on your screen or on the wall, and that's visible. And at that point in time, I had never really been the kind of person that would look at something like that and get inspired. I just decided that, by God, I'm going to live to 110. And so whenever anybody would bring up the future of aging, the potential of living for 20 or 30 more years, I immediately made the calculation to go out to 110 and said, well, for me, that's another 40 years. And so it was just a matter of keeping that in front of me at all times so that I would not lose the future perfect goal of living to 110. I don't know that I'm going to make it, but that's where I'm headed.
And it seems that 110 is not only a number, but also connected with a clear picture of how you want to live your life and what differences that could make. I'm very curious. People come to you, obese probably, and they have a history of diets that have worked and not worked, and they gained weight, and now they're here because of all the things that kind of happened. So very much in this problem view. And very curious, how do you work with them when they come into your online program from the first moment on?
I think one of the things I try and impress upon people is that what got them here is not specifically their fault. And so we know that continuing what they're doing today will only make matters worse. I help them see that they're there for a reason, not because somebody told them to be, because I weed that out immediately. If somebody told you to come to my program, you're not going to make it because it's not an easy program. But if you're there because you want to do something different with your life, then we're in a position where we can both work well together. And so by approaching it from the perspective that, yes, we have a problem, but it's not insurmountable, that knowing what I did and what I was successful with, I know that it can be done. I have client examples of making it successful. And sure, some people are not going to reach the point of losing all of the weight they desire, but we're not looking specifically at weight. We're looking at their health numbers, their metrics. If they're still overweight, but the doctor says they're in incredible health, then we're good. We don't have to lose all that weight unless that's what they desire to do. And so that's how we kind of approach it.
So it's not about losing weight, but about how I want to live my life in the future.
That's exactly it. It's how can we take where you are today and create an entirely new lifestyle that will provide you with the health and well-being that you desire in a way that is actually doable. And that's the problem with lifestyle change. It's not easy. And so for people to get past that change is difficult mindset and start seeing small successes continue to mount into bigger change, it kind of becomes almost like a game and they just stay with it.
And it seems to me that this is the perfect topic for changes happening all the time in one or the other direction. So you say the life they desire. How do you explore the life that they desire, prefer future perfect with them?
Well, if you know anything about solution focus, which you do, and I know your audience does, you know that one of the first steps you do is to sit down and examine the future that the individual you're working with truly desires, not the desired future from somebody else, like a spouse or a doctor or something like that, but to sit down and really focus on what it is they want. So I help them find their 110, if you will. What is it that will make them find some way to sustainably make change throughout their life? So that if we change the way they eat, if we increase their activity levels, if we change their environment, how can they stay with that in a way that they have chosen, not in a way that I'm prescribing? So I'm not going to sit down with somebody, as I said, and force them to follow a structure. I'm going to sit down with someone and help them find the best path to reach their goal in a way that they can follow every day of their life.
And yesterday, you both mentioned that working on what works is such an important element in this program and in this topic.
Yeah, the problem that most people have when they're going into a program to change their lifestyle is they expect to be told what to do. And as we know, if you go into a diet, you're put into a structure that is calorie restrictive, and you have to eat certain foods, and you're dictated in what activities you're going to do. Where if you're doing things that you enjoy doing, if you're eating foods that are healthy and you enjoy, then you're starting to make progress toward your goal. And so you see small steps, as we say in the solution focus world, you see small steps beginning to compound one upon the other. And you pretty rapidly reach a point where the momentum of what you're doing continues itself. And you're no longer really working at it as hard. You're just now following a path that is comfortable, doable, and is helping you reach a goal. And one of the best things is when somebody comes in with terrible health metrics and 6 months later, their health metrics are vastly different. It makes a huge impact on knowing that small changes, making their own decisions based upon what they choose to do, but with that goal in mind, really has a huge impact.
So it's really a lot about empowering people. And I think, like, what I hear, transporting the message that they are responsible for their health and not someone else. And I think, or I guess, that a lot of people might come with an expectation, you know, that you tell them what to do and how to do, and then you start asking them questions. So how do you invite them into solution-focused conversations, and how do they react to that?
I think the thing that I've done most frequently is use surprise. As you say, we ask questions in solution focus, and the questions I'm asking are about where they want to go, not what got you here. I'm not shaming them, because part of what got them here is them. Not all of it, but part of it is. So I'm working with questions that are, one, positively oriented, future oriented, questions that help them see the things they can do, the steps they can take. And it is so surprising to hear that kind of a question coming from a therapist or a coach or even a spouse. Then they can begin to see that this approach is going to be different. We're not going to delve into their relationship with their parents. You know, we're going to ask questions, a lot of questions, about what they see for themselves, what they want to do, what direction they want to take. And that is such a difference for most people that for a while it's a little disconcerting. And then they get the message that this is a different approach. We're not going to do the same old thing that hasn't worked.
You mentioned that they start changing small little things. And I'm very curious, what are some examples of small little things that made differences for your participants?
Well, it's really easy in both eating and in activity to find small little things. Those are the two pieces of the puzzle that have the biggest impact on preventing diabetes. So if somebody is, one, if they're overweight or obese, movement can be difficult for them. So if maybe the simplest thing for them to do, that first small step, is to walk from their front door down the driveway to the mailbox and back again. That may be the first small step. And maybe we do that for a week, and they're consciously paying attention to what's going on when they're doing that. And then maybe in the second week, we say, okay, let's walk to the end of the block and come back. So little things like that, where it's something relatively straightforward. And if they're seriously obese, it maybe it's get off the couch and move to the front door, you know, not even going outside yet. So you kind of approach it with small, simple things that you can do that can compound each other. With eating, there's a million simple little things you can do. For instance, you're working away from the home and you don't take your lunch with you. You go out and eat, and it's generally fast food as we eat here in America. Maybe today you order water with your burger and fries and not a soda. And at the end of that meal, you sit back and question, how does that make me feel? Do I feel differently? 2 hours later, do I feel differently? And maybe even if it's just do that for a week, you've begun the pattern of making some changes, and it wasn't no more fast food. It was make one change.
And it was not prescribed by you, but they've come up with their own little things that they can change in their life. And how do you help them focus on what is working well? You said one example just now with questioning and looking at the differences of what they do. How else do you help them focus in their life after they go out of the program and then come back to really focus on what works?
I don't use the phrase mindfulness very often, but mindfulness is a huge component of this. And I think it may be something that should be specifically discussed in the solution-focused world, that it is really mindfulness. It's paying attention to what's going on. One of the things that I really like is to have people put a stop sign on their refrigerator. And the stop sign is an acronym for stop, take a breath, observe, and proceed. So you walk up to the refrigerator because you want some food. You see the sign, you stop. You look at the sign, you know what it means. So you take a breath. And maybe you take more than one breath. You might need a few because you're about to break a habit.
And you already walked to the refrigerator.
Exactly. Right. So you may be worn out and you need that extra breath. So, you know, you observe as the next step. What is it you're actually feeling? Why do you think you need food? Are you truly hungry, or are you bored, or any number of other things? And if you're hungry, then what can you eat that's not going to break your pattern? And then if you feel like, yes, I'm hungry and I'm going to eat this, then proceed. But knowing that you did that by your own volition, of your own choice. And so as you move forward after the program, you do the same thing. Every time you are in a situation where you are about to take an action that might be contrary to what your plan was, do the stop, or at least become mindful for that moment of what is it you're doing and why are you doing it? And does it contribute to your success? And if it does, most people will be able to keep that moving forward. If it doesn't, then they stop doing that and try something else. And that seems to work pretty well for most people.
So really learning how to deliberately choose again.
Yeah, it's really about making personal choices. I'm hoping that it's a personal choice that brought you to the program, and I'm hoping it's a personal choice that will keep you in the program. And as we progress through it, I'm convinced that you will make a lot of personal choices that you will see having a powerful effect on your health and your well-being.
Personal choices and online work. I'm really curious, and talking with you yesterday really brings up some real advantages in doing this work online. So what are the advantages of coming to your program and doing it online with you?
Well, one of the big and most obvious advantages is that we can deal with people from anywhere in the country, and that is our focus. We only deal with people in the United States, but we can deal with anybody. We're in Arizona, which is in the western half of the country, but we could deal with anybody from anywhere. So you could live in Florida and participate in our program. That would be impossible to do if it was an in-person group kind of thing. The other big advantage is that because we have that, we can reach a much wider and more diverse audience. Being in Sedona, we live in a rural area, and the population is much smaller. And they're going to approach things from the thought processes and the way of life that exists in Sedona. But if you're a person from Sedona participating in a group that is made up of a wide variety of people from around the country, you're going to get exposed to different thought processes, different activities than maybe you'd thought about, different philosophies. And so you gain quite a bit of additional exposure to new ways of thinking. And that's what lifestyle change is about, new ways of thinking, without having to leave the comfort of your home. It's all right there on that screen in front of you.
Well, and one thing, and I guess this is something you do as well, that comes to my mind are the little reminders you can send between sessions. So people really get like focus messages or like little reminders of what's working or like whatever it is. So what are you doing between sessions that's helpful for people?
That's really a great question. One of the things that we do differently. Actually, there are several things that we do differently. One is that the program itself is made up of a weekly one-hour meeting. We also include a one-hour Q&A session and another night or another daytime. So people can later in the week come back and ask questions and get feedback from both myself as well as the rest of the participants. We also have the ability for people to send unlimited messages to me. So they can email me anytime they choose with questions, concerns, suggestions, that kind of thing. Observations. What worked for me today? I need to share this. They can do that with me directly. We have a private Facebook community where all the participants can share their successes, discuss their struggles, get the support of the community to help them move forward. And I'm in there participating as well. And then we also, not every day, but several times a week, I'll send specific people text message reminders based on the kinds of things that have been discussed either in the group or in our private coaching sessions, which is unique again to our program. All of our programs, no matter what level you buy into, include personalized coaching. So there's a whole variety of ways that we're in their face again all week and available to them in various ways.
Available, and what really strikes me is that you seem to be in very good and great contact with each and every one of them and with their personal story. Of course, it's somehow the story of the group, but then it's the story of the individuals and connecting to the individual needs and to the, well, needs or preferred futures of the group and utilizing that. I really love that.
Yeah, to me, it's something that's absolutely necessary when you're doing things in an online environment, because you don't have that direct face-to-face reach out and touch the person next to you group setting. And so you have to be more engaging, more interactive with the participants. They have to feel that they are able to get the one-on-one support they need as well as the group support that they need. There's tons and tons of science that prove that community is one of the biggest drivers. And so we create as much of that as possible, and using the technology to keep them focused throughout the week is, I think, a big benefit.
So, and how does solution focus come in when it comes to the community building? What differences does solution focus make there for you?
Well, one of the things that I think is really powerful in the community is to not dictate what to do. So if somebody comes in with a question or a concern, I'm not going to respond directly immediately to the solution to that problem, because that's my solution. What I am going to do is maybe ask them what they think they might do. I might ask the other members of the community for suggestions, and then I will come back in and work with that person, either in the community or separately, on what did they gain from what they've read and heard that they felt worked really well for them or might work really well for them, and then how can we implement that for the next few sessions or whatever as they need to move forward individually.
Beautiful. So, Kat, you wrote in the 90s this book about how to make online meetings. And I'm really curious to also hear from your perspective and your point of view how online work, especially in your area, and solution focus come together, and what are the advantages, and maybe also what are your preferred futures with that?
Ah, great question. Yes, in the mid-90s, 1990s, there were several of us who began to work with the initial application that was creating what we now call webinars today, the synchronous communication. And because several of us were involved in this work, we decided that it would be great to try to write a book. Well, we did that, and it took 2 years. The entire book was written online using communication function. We were all located in between the East Coast, Colorado, Los Angeles, and I happened to be in Hawaii at that time. And the entire book was written with us communicating online and, of course, then published. Since then, though, the information that we did, and I did do a dissertation on synchronous communication, I've had other published works in that. Because of that knowledge and the application that was being done at that point, I then carried that information forward into how do we work with clients online? How do webinars work? How do you even use teleconferencing where you're not even seeing the face? Because honestly, there are some people who don't want to have their face showing, and that has to be worked with also. That's a choice. The way of doing that then is to create ways of asking questions, both of individuals and of the group, to encourage conversation and collaboration with each other. And when the setup is that there is not judgment, there is not telling, but that we ask the question and then we ask what else and what else and what else. To get to that thought process that says, oh, it's just not the first answer that I come up with. It is other things that I hadn't really consciously thought of yet. And then there's that aha moment that happens. It's the allowance of collaboration that when a group figures out that this is okay to do, and as Gary was saying, not just being told what to do, changes the entire environment. And that, to me, is the power of solutions focus as a model to use in an applied circumstance, in an applied environment. And that's what makes it fun, honestly. It becomes fun to work with clients. It becomes fun to work with a group. And why not have fun instead of delving into problems all the time?
So you've worked online for a long time. You've worked with solution focus for a long time. If there's one thing from your journey, solution focus and online, that you would like others to know because it might make a vital difference for them, what would that be?
Oh, wow. You're causing me to have to think.
Knowing that change is happening all the time and the answer might be a different one in a few minutes tomorrow.
Yes, it might be. I think from being involved with the solutions focus and change and the positive look forward is take the risk. Learn something new. If you think you are interested in it but not quite sure about it, go try it. That to me is how we can get from here to the there that we want to be at.
What is it that you would like to give others from your solution focus and online journey, Gary?
I think that the key to me is that, well, it's easy for me to change. I thrive on change. It's been the focus of my entire life. And so if we can make people understand that, or help them understand that change is, as you've said, ongoing from moment to moment. It's happening all around us all the time, and it can be an exciting and enjoyable process to change and to find new ways of doing things that will help you reach a different outcome. I think that's the thing I like most about doing work with solution focus. That's the same whether it's being done online or if you're doing it face-to-face or in my previous existence doing it on the phone with clients. It isn't unique to the online world. It's perhaps a unique perspective or application of the solution focus. Probably not, but I'm sure people are doing it all the time. In fact, that's how I learned it was in an online program with a bunch of people all over the world. So it's not new, but it's how do you take a fairly structured, free-flowing program, which is kind of unusual to say, but solution focus is very loosey-goosey if you want, but there is a structure to it. So how can you take that and apply it in an online setting, which is what I find most intriguing about the combination. Can I make the outcome for somebody halfway across the country the same as if they were sitting in my living room with me?
So where can people find you and your program if they became curious now?
Well, we do have a Facebook page. We have a web page. We're on LinkedIn. We try and cover the internet quite well. Our website is bluecoralcoachingsolutions.com, and they can find us there. There is information about our general coaching programs as well as our diabetes prevention program.
And let me jump in real quick with the name Blue Coral. Blue Coral is a unique type of coral. And for many of us, the situation that we have with climate change and the massive bleachings that have been happening with our coral environments, we as a company support coral preservation and conservation. And part of our income on a yearly basis is given to an organization that primarily works with that. So I think probably from a solutions focus point of view, we also have that, if you want to call it a greater cause for the environment, that we think is also very important.
Beautiful. Thank you very much for sharing that. And of course, you will find all the information on our website in the resource section of this podcast on www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast, and then go to episode number 42.
And now let's come to the challenge of the week.
Okay, so the challenge this week is to stop. And that might sound a little strange, but I talked about the mindful exercise that I use in my program. If you have access to a magnetic plastic stop sign that you can apply to your refrigerator, I know you can find them in a variety of different stores, but if you don't, just create your own little stop sign on paper and post it on your refrigerator. And the purpose of that stop sign is to make you stop and think before you act. And it does both create mindfulness, and it also gives you a small step that you can take each time you approach whatever it is you're going to stop. So in this case, I like it on the refrigerator because it stops people from opening the door. And so let's talk about stop again. It's the four letters of stop. Each have a purpose. So S is stop. Just stop what you're doing. Don't open the refrigerator door. T stands for take a breath. And the reason we're taking a breath is to help you stop. So you've stopped. You're going to take a breath, maybe take more than one, and then you're going to observe what's going on mentally and physically for you. Why are you standing at the refrigerator at this moment? Did you come here because you're hungry? Did you come here because you're bored? Did you come here because you have a craving that isn't necessarily food related, but in your past has always been? So for instance, you're feeling stressed and you go to the refrigerator because that's, in my case, where I store my dark chocolate. So, you know, I would stop and say, do I really want that dark chocolate? Of course I do. It's dark chocolate, for God's sake. But do I really need the dark chocolate? Maybe, maybe not. You know, maybe it's 10 minutes from dinner. I can get by for another 10 minutes. So that's the observe portion. And then based on your observations, proceed. That's the P in stop. So do I open the refrigerator and grab that dark chocolate? Probably in my case. But if that wasn't what you were reaching for, proceed either to open the refrigerator and choose purposefully what it is you want to eat, or walk away from the refrigerator. Maybe it's walk over to the sink and get a glass of water. That glass of water will make a big difference in whether you feel hungry or not. It's a simple little process, takes seconds to do. You just need the reminder of the stop sign.
And maybe it even helps you to enjoy the piece of chocolate even more.
What a great challenge, especially with the upcoming holidays and lots of food that is presented there for everyone to just eat. So deliberate choice with the stop sign. Thank you very much for that.
And once again, thank you very much for having us here, for sharing all your wisdom around this topic with us. And we are very curious to hear from you now. What inspired you with our conversation? And we invite you to share that in the comment field of our podcast, and also share with us how the challenge challenge of the week worked for you.
So go to www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast and then to episode number 42.
We are now looking forward to talking about food, to have dinner with the two of you, and have a lovely evening, everyone. A lovely week, everyone.
Thank you and goodbye.
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 Wow. Do you also like the Simply Focus podcast? Then help Elfie and Dominic spread the word. Give the Simply Focus podcast a 5-star rating on iTunes, Google Play, and other platforms. Plus, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode.